Diversity, diversity, diversity.
Years of cause confusion.
Oh, fascist moron.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome to another Office Hours, first one in a while. Now, I will be doing the super thanks and all of the super chats a little bit later on, as per usual. But there's been some significant developments since last we spoke. First, there's been the return of the grooming scandal story, as well as the spat between Elon Musk and Nigel Farage. And Justin Trudeau has resigned. And I actually think that these two stories, even though they don't look like it, are related in some obscure way. And I'll go into all of that. As you can imagine, Twitter has been an absolute sewage pipe of, the rawest of slop. Everybody's been, everybody forgot very quickly about the last Elon Musk spaz out, and now everybody's talking about this Elon Musk spaz out. On this show, I'm going to give you some value-free analysis. Increasingly, I'm one of the few people who's going to take a look at these stories in the cold, hard light of day and say a few things that might not be popular, say a few things that nobody else is saying. Let me tell you one reason why I can do that and so many other people do not. It is because I am not looking out for my career. I'm not looking out for making a media appearance on this station or that station or writing for this publication or that publication. Okay, I just do not care about climbing the greasy pole in that way. Right, I haven't got a job I'm trying to cling on to or anything like that. So I am independent, and that is why I'll give you all of the considerations and not just lean into whatever the current thing happens to be, okay? Now, we'll get onto that in a second. First, courses, ladies and gentlemen, promo code SHORJAN. And why not? It's still sufficiently early, I think, in the campaign, in the January sale campaign, that I'll play the ad in full. I have been working on the Foundations of Shakespeare course, and lots of people have been waiting for that for a long time. You'll be pleased to know the course is actually finished in terms of the material. I have written all of the lectures. There are 14 lectures. Each lecture is about between 6 and 8,000 words, pretty much. So they're going to be long lectures. I just haven't recorded them yet. I haven't made all of the slides and things. That will be coming, and I should be able to hit my deadline of February the 1st. I will certainly have the book in to the publisher, because there's going to be a tie-in course book that will come in due course. But anyway, promo code SHORJAN, 25% off all of the existing courses, Trivium, Economics, you name it. Let's play it, and then I'll come back. I'll talk about grooming gangs. I'll talk about Elon Musk versus Nigel Farage, Tommy, and many other topics. Justin Trudeau.
Sure. Yeah. Sure, 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 sure. And so, sure.
Sure, Jan.
Can you command a comma like Joseph Conrad?
Sure, sure, sure,
sure, sure, sure, and sure, Jan.
Are you magnificent in your mastery of marginalism like Murray Rothbard?
Sure.
Sure, Jan.
Are you legendary in your logical leveling of lamentable loquacity?
Sure.
Sure, Jan.
Come on down to the January sale at the Academic Agency. Promo code SHORJAN for 25% off. All this January, I got more courses than the Queen had horses.
Sure, Jan.
I got better rates than Andrew Tate's ad mates.
Sure, Jan.
I got better deals than Lizzo's had meals.
Sure.
Sure, Jan.
And so, sure, 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 and so, sure, 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 and so, sure.
All right. I'd actually stopped playing that, and people were like, no, play it in full every time. So So weirdly, by popular demand, I'm playing that ad. So I've kind of had enough of it myself. But anyway, right, where should we start? Well, first things first is that Elon Musk one day, for some reason, started going ham about grooming gangs and turned his attention from calling MAGA people retards and various other names over the H-1B visa issue to attacking Keir Starmer and the British government and the British establishment over grooming gangs, which, you know, was a little bit sudden. But that's what Elon Musk is like. He's kind of sudden, he's spurgy, he kind of doesn't really think about what he's saying or doing. He just kind of has these little episodes. Some might even call them psychotic episodes. Generally, I have a video coming out tomorrow about rhetorical tactics. And one of the ones I hate more than any other is psychologizing, right? I usually hate it when people psychologize. They try to find a subtext, right? They're not looking at what somebody says. They're trying to find out the thing underneath. However, in this case, in the case of Elon Musk, I think it was Dickie Spencer or somebody like that said that Musk is unusual, right? He's already the world's richest man, but he has some need to be loved. Donald Trump's a bit like this as well, but Musk has it a lot. He's got a need that he wants people to like him, right? He wants to be popular. He wants to get the adulation of, you know, whoever. And I do think that he, you know, the pushback he was getting over the H-1Bs was, you know, significant. And he didn't like that. He didn't like falling out with all of his fanboys. So how, what better way to get them back on board than to switch tack and look at a surefire win, right? Grooming gangs. Grooming gangs, I mean, it happened, the whole grooming scandal happened quite a long time ago now, but it is, objectively speaking, one of the worst tragedies, atrocities, I think you could use the word atrocity, to afflict the people of this nation of all time. You know, if there was any justice, you know, rather than building monuments and, you know, yet another museum to the events that happened during World War II, right, there would be monuments and events and museums documenting this, because it is, you know, it's not a scandal, undersells it. It is a crime against the British people that has taken place. And for many people, this groom, for many people on the British right, the grooming scandal was what brought them to the table in the first place, right? It was the thing that turned them against the system in the first place, if you want to put it that way. Okay, so in many ways, when it comes to this issue, that you know, you're, especially if you're targeting or wishing to appeal to the British right, you're preaching to, you're not only preaching to the choir, you are kind of fueling the fires of a kind of burning passion of righteousness, because this injustice that was done to thousands of young girls has never been rectified. Like, for many people, yes, there have been some people who've gone to jail. There was an inquiry done about 10 years ago, I think in 2014. Yeah, that's 10 years ago now. You know, but there hasn't really been systematic justice. The people who were in charge at that time have never had their comeuppance. The individual police officers involved, the chief of police, all the way up to the person who was the head of the British Prosecution Service at the time, Sir Keir Starmer, none of these people have really had their comeuppance. And the way the British establishment tends to deal with anything that's unsavory or anything that's, you know, any of its kind of past wrongs, is to launch one of these quote unquote independent inquiries, all right? But the inquiry usually is a way to bury the issue. One problem with the inquiry is that it happens often long after the event took place. I think there was one for the Hillsborough disaster. I think there was one, in fact, I think there was one for, it was the Hillsborough disaster, which I remember had an inquiry. And all of the people who were looking for justice and so on, even on that, were like, well, hold on a second, we've waited 20 years for this. What's this bullshit? You know, it's kind of a whitewash. You know, the sister, it's the mafia investigating the mafia. Same thing happened with the Iraq inquiry, where even Tony Blair had to face, a panel of people questioning him and so on. I remember that. What was it called? Was that the Chilcot inquiry? Was it Chilcot? So somebody remind me. And again, surprise, surprise. Yeah, mistakes were made, guys. Some people lied and some people died, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, we found that Mr. T. Blair did absolutely nothing wrong. surprise, surprise. And with the grooming gangs, this has really been the system response, right? It's like, well, yeah, mistakes were made. This was unfortunate. Sorry about that, guys. But ultimately, nobody of any significance is going to get it, right? At least not Mr. T. Blair, who, let's not forget, was the Prime Minister at the time, or Gordon Brown. And these people are just like totally untouchable, okay? But also now the current Prime Minister, who was the head of prosecutions at the time, Keir Starmer, well, I mean, you know, he has been rewarded for his efforts by becoming the Prime Minister. The problem is that there's nothing really tying what was happening on the ground and the systematic errors that were made. Nothing really tying. It's like trying to, if you remember watching Godfather, you know, I talked about the mafia investigates the mafia. One of the problems that the feds had nailing the Corleone family in the Godfather movies was like, it's like, well, yeah, we know that the the Don is at the head of this massive organization, Michael, Al Pacino's character, but there's no evidence linking, like there was no order given by Corleone to this thug, to this thug, to this thug. Like there's too many buffers between the chains of command. So you can't really get the top level people because there's no actual evidence linking them in that way, right? And don't forget, all of these people are lawyers. So they will have said just enough, or they would have said the right sorts of things at the right time to put themselves kind of beyond condemnation. You know, they like any inquiry is going to exonerate Keir Starmer, for example. They'll say, well, actually, he changed this rule. He didn't whitewash it. He didn't cover it up. They're not going to get Starmer on that. Why is grooming gangs coming back as an issue? Okay. Why is grooming gangs coming back as an issue after 10 years? And that is because despite the fact that they're not going to, you know, no official inquiry is going to find Keir Starmer guilty of that, I can tell you for free. Despite that fact, in the public consciousness, if you can tie the whole system cover-up of the grooming gangs specifically to the figure of Keir Starmer, that has a lot of weight, especially when he is historically unpopular. I think the last poll showed that he is 61% of the public don't like Keir Starmer. 61%. He is historically unpopular, okay? And normies, like, for example, the missus, she doesn't follow politics. She barely watches politics. During the election, she said, I'm never going to vote for Keir Starmer, right? Never going to vote for him. I said, why is that? I said, well, and she said, well, because of Rotherham. He was in charge then, and I will never forget that as long as I... And see, this is what people have to remember. The grooming gangs and Rotherham had a documentary on it, on the BBC. I can't remember exactly when it aired, okay? But it was aired, like it was brought to public attention back then, right? You know, this idea that it's only Tommy and friends who drew attention to this is like, that's a narrative that goes around, but it's not quite true, because the even the mainstream media, after a certain amount of time and pressure and so on, they did do their expose on it, right? They did. So even normies are aware of Rotherham, right? Not only did they put out a documentary, but correct me if I'm wrong, I think there was like a TV drama, you know, like a BBC drama or something made about it as well. So it's not like the system hasn't in some way acknowledged what happened. Okay. They did the same thing with Jimmy Savile later on, of course. So yeah, it's kind of interesting that it all comes back now. And of course people are angry about it. There's burning passion over this topic, and it could actually be successful is what I'm saying, because I've given you an example of a, you know, pretty normie person, the missus, who over this issue said she would never vote for Keir Starmer personally, because in her mind he was the one who, you know, for right or for wrong, he was the one in her mind that was responsible for justice not being done. Okay. And I guess there are millions of people like that in the country. Okay. So this is actually a pretty good attack vector to get Starmer. You could argue that Starmer is the end boss of the grooming scandal, right? I mean, because he was the head of the prosecutions, he was the head of the snake, if you want to put it that way. Okay. So you could argue that he is the top man. Are you ever going to get the British establishment to admit that he was guilty or whatever? I don't think so. But you could put enough pressure on him. You could get enough people outraged about it. You could create enough of a media storm around it that his position just becomes untenable anyway. And, you know, he becomes such a liability for the Labour Party that he has to go, right? Or he has to call an election or something, okay? And not just Starmer, but of course, Jess Phillips is another major kind of face of this. And there's a few other people as well who, you know, are implicated in various different ways. So as attack vectors go, it's not a bad one. I have said in the past that Boris Johnson could have kill-shotted Starmer back in 2020, right? Back when Jeremy Corbyn first stepped down. I don't understand why Johnson didn't just go full Rotherham back then, because he could have destroyed Starmer before he was even the Labour leader. Johnson, for whatever reason, never used that move. That was his nuclear option. What Elon Musk has done, and I was actually trying to figure out what caused this, like how, why is this trending again? Why is this back on the radar? And I believe that the actual reason for it is my buddy, Max Tempers, who is actually like a Blair guy. Like he's one of the guys who very often has fed me information about, the Blair government and so on and so forth. I think that he actually had the initial tweet that got people talking about grooming gangs again. And then it kind of like, you know, people kept on talking about it. It snowballed. And eventually it got onto Elon's radar from this initial tweet. I'll share the tweet on my screen. There's Max Tempers, 30th of December here. He says, the grooming gang's trial summary transcripts are utterly grotesque. It's incredible we haven't got mass civil unrest. Media reporting guidelines help bottle it up. Some of these people are going to walk free soon. And he's just going through some of those people who should have had justice or should have faced justice, if you want to put it that way. The perpetrators, the people who were actually responsible for it, didn't, I mean, you can read that stuff in your own time. That is what I think was the spark. And then somehow it got onto Elon Musk's radar. Okay. Now, it goes without saying that I, as much as anyone else, would love to see justice over the grooming. I mean, we say Rotherham. It's not. It wasn't just Rotherham. There are other towns that this has happened in. The scale of it is, I mean, it's industrial. It's industrial. We're talking thousands, tens of thousands of young girls who basically were treated as fair game to have this happen to them because they had no political champions in the system. They had no political representation, right? Unlike various minority groups who have collective action, who have, you know, friends of this and friends of that behind them, those girls had nobody. They had no organized minority looking out for their interests. That's why it happened. And the left and the middle class in this country, who for some reason have a seething hatred of the native working class, which I've never quite understood why they hate them as much as they do, but they do. They basically got to a position where, you know, some of them were bordering on saying like, well, they deserved it, but let's face it, they deserved it. They weren't innocent. They were asking for it, you know, or like they were. I'm not saying they outright said that. I'm saying they were edging close to that. Or you had the even worse sniffy attitude. And I'm talking back when this was current. I mean, it's still kind of ongoing now, but I'm talking like when it was the thick of this happening, people on television, comedians, talking heads, intellectuals, and so on. They acted as if bringing this up was just distasteful, right? Oh, how, you know, you're stoking division, all of this sort of talk. So, you know, this is a serious issue, and it's a good vector on which to attack Keir Starmer. I'll say that. Okay. Now, with all of that said, there are other things afoot. And this is the bit where I'm going to talk about some of the hidden power dynamics that could inform what we're seeing here, especially since it really initially came from the big push came from Elon Musk. And there's quite a few different things to get into here, but I want to remind everybody, first of all, of how I have broken down the various power factions in the West. Remember, I've got the neocons on the left here, whose ultimate aim is to remake the world in America's image, to maintain American and Israeli hegemony, to, quote, combat anti-Semitism, to use American hard and soft power, to promote forever wars, and their various power bases are the conservative establishment, US media, various kind of lobby groups in America, the American government, and the kind of wonk, the think tank world, okay? And then against them, you've got the techno-globalists who, you know, they're much more into globalist government, globalist institutions. They want to eliminate all the distinctions between people, promote technocratic solutions, to promote globalist oversight, and to lean on things like the United Nations, the NGO network, blah, 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 okay? Now, it seems to me that, I mean, in my reading of events, Trump represents essentially the completion of a Zionist takeover of American institutions, okay? And if you were to say, well, what happens in America then? America sets the tempo, and therefore what happens there, all of the rest of the countries have to realign, okay? Now, it just so happens that last week I made this video about five questions that will determine what happens in 2025. And I said, how many of the remaining globalists, Starmer, Trudeau, Macron, Schultz, can hold on to power? Or will we see a big Trumpian realignment across the West, right? Well, Biden's gone already. Trudeau has gone just yesterday, I think it was yesterday, Trudeau went, okay? So out of these five, who were the last men standing, two have gone already. So we've got Schultz, who's bound to go in a couple of months when they have the election in Germany. We've got Macron, who's still holding on. And of course, we've got Starmer. Okay. And I believe that the push that we're seeing on Starmer is actually ultimately the same people who are backing Trump and Musk, the Zionists, are also behind this push on Starmer. And interestingly, Macron, who's clearly a globalist, has been pushing back on Elon Musk and saying that Elon Musk must be brought to heel. He must face a, you know, he is interfering in European elections. He must, you know, and there's even talk now of Musk being arrested in France, right? Musk being arrested in France over interference in European elections, right? That he's interfering in Germany. He's probably going to interfere in France. He's interfering in the UK. We can't allow this. And there's going to be, like, Macron is prepared to use power, state power, right, to hold on to the globalist position. Now, let me now introduce you to this tab here. Who is on this tab? Let's have a look. Well, we've got Andrew Neil. We've got the lesbian feminist, Julie Bindle. We've got the reptile, Konstantin Kysin. We've got the sitcom writer, the Father Ted dude, Graham Linehan. And we've got world's best-selling children's author and inventor of Harry Potter, J.K. Rowling. Okay. Now, what on earth do these people have in common? To you, pleb, these five people have nothing in common whatsoever. Andrew Neil, well, he was the chairman of The Spectator. He presented that show with Portillo for years, didn't he? He was a BBC man. He had a bit of a stint in GB News, and now he's kind of retired, but he's like an old, ostensibly conservative, leaning journalist. Okay. Julie Bindle is a feminist. Konstantin Kysin just presents this kind of internet show, Trigonometry. Linehan, he is controversial because he's done some anti-trans stuff, right? He's an anti-trans guy, but basically he's a comedian. And J.K. Rowling is an author. Of course, she has been controversial because she's been opposed to trans stuff as well. Okay. In fact, so is Julie Bindle. So Julie Bindle is a TERF, and J.K. Rowling is a TERF, right? What do these five people have in common? Answers on a postcard, ladies and gentlemen. What do each of these people have in common? So the first thing I will note is that cast your minds back, because memory is the greatest enemy of the slop, right? Memory. Just remembering last week, for example. Cast your minds back to 2020. Andrew Neil, that defender of truth, of justice, that intrepid journalist, Andrew Neil, did he ask valid questions about the lockdowns or about the COVID-19 vaccine in 2020? What was that? What were Andrew Neil's stances over that? Did Andrew Neil in 2020 launch an independent investigation into the claims of election fraud levied by Donald Trump against Joe Biden? Or did Andrew Neil in 2020 call anybody who suspected any malfeasance in the 2020 election a raving conspiratard and lunatic? And did Andrew Neil say over and over again that the claims were baseless? Baseless. Do you remember that? Since the Ukraine war started, did Andrew Neil, intrepid journalist, ask, hold on a second, why the hell is our government so hell-bent on this war? Did Andrew Neil ever once since the conflict in the Middle East started, ask, hold on, have Israel gone a bit far here? Right, okay, like, yeah, October 7th was bad, but is there a point where the retribution comes too much? Did Andrew Neil ask any of those questions? Is Andrew Neil a regime man, or is he against the regime? Press 1 if you think that Andrew Neil is a regime man, and press 2 if you think that Andrew Neil is a dissident. A sea of ones, yeah? A sea of ones. But when it came to Elon Musk's push on grooming gangs against the British establishment, intrepid journalist Andrew Neil broke ranks from his fellow scumbags. This was the moment, friends, that Andrew Neil was going to break ranks and become brave. Now he was going to talk about the systematic injustice done to these young girls. Now Andrew Neil wants justice, because Andrew Neil is a friend of truth. Now we can ask the same questions of each of these figures. Before even, I haven't been on Twitter, but I made a list of these five people before I went on Twitter, right? Because I'm not on there anymore. I can't stand it. And I said, look, these five people I know are part of a network. Each one of these people has got a special affiliation with a certain country in the Middle East. You know the one? And I was like, I wonder where each of these people, are they just maintaining a kind of stony silence? Are they virtuing, signaling to the left and being like, oh no, this rhetoric has really gone too far. Elon Musk has really lost it here, which has been one of the lines that the shitlibs have taken on this. Or were they in fact all in on it? And actually all five of them were all in on it. Funny that, isn't it? Funny. In fact, there's there's somebody not pictured here that I would like to draw your attention to. In fact, an entire publication that I would like to draw your attention to. That person is Tom Slater, who is the editor of Spiked Magazine. Spiked Magazine is basically like has communist roots. We've talked about this, I'm sure, in the past. Scrump and Evelyn have done deep dives to the history of Spiked, right? They're basically communist, right? Their roots are in communism. But they have been pro-populist in general and quote-unquote pro-free speech. And funny enough, they've gone all in on this as well. Spiked Magazine have. And I'm always interested to know, to have a memory and to think, like, what was Spiked Magazine on all of these other crunch issues? Where Spike Magazine could have taken a real stance. Did they take a stance or did they not take a stance? Just like Andrew Neil, right? Well, let's have a look what Spike Magazine was saying back in 2020 when when Donald Trump was claiming that he was diddled out of the 2020 election. Rudy Giuliani's crazy conspiracy theory. All right, so they thought it was just crazy. They just thought it was mental. Ah, fucking Giuliani went mad in 2020. The guy who saved New York just lost it at that point, and he was just baseless is what it was. Here's Tom Slater back in November 2020. The Trump is Hitler meme collides with reality. Let's see what he says here. This is the news that Joe Biden has kind of conceded the US presidential election to Joe Biden, right? The Trumpist tantrum over the 2020 election result, the increasingly absurd evidence-free attempts to prove the Democrats stole the White House via mass electoral fraud finally seems to be colliding with reality. Ah, all right, baseless, yeah. What about on the old vax? Well, took a while. I think Spiked eventually, once it was safe to do so, started to become more kind of COVID skeptics. But, you know, in April, they were talking about anti-vax hysteria. Tom Slater, the rage against Israel at the Eurovision Song Contest is disgraceful. Oh, yeah, absolutely disgraceful. Oh, yeah. Brendan O'Neill, why Ukraine must win. All right. So all these issues of actual substance, these live current thing issues, spiked, it seems to me, just side with the establishment again and again. Let's go back on these other figures here. Let's go back on, who was it? Andrew Neil, J.K. Rowling, Konstantin Kissin, Graham Linehan. On all those issues, on those substantive matters, funny enough, they end up just siding with the regime. Oh, why Ukraine isn't giving up. Even in spite, Boris Zelensky and the myth of the thwarted peace deal. All right. It was just, people just made it up that Boris Johnson scuppered the peace deal back in April 2022. That was just made up, according to Spike magazine. The point I'm making is, the point I'm laboring, is that all of these people, all of these kind of nodes in the network, all of these people in the system, suddenly, now in 2024, decide, well, we're going to go all in on this grooming gangs thing. We're going to lean into rhetoric that the left is calling dangerous and fascist and so on. We're going to lean into all of that. Interesting. Very interesting. Now, and there's a couple of other elements of this story as well. And one of them is that during the tirade, and this is really where the Elon Farage thing comes to the head. Elon Musk, the Reform Party needs a new leader. Farage doesn't have what it takes. The Reform Party needs a new leader. Farage doesn't have what it takes. 71.4 million views, 145,000 likes. And that is why this stream is called Elon Musk versus Nigel Farage. Because while Farage and Reform, and indeed the entire Tory party, notably, are calling for another, like, you know, are getting behind this bandwagon, they've all jumped on it, right? Calling for an inquiry or whatever else needs to happen. They're all broadly on the same page. Farage would not kind of walk back his comments on Tommy Robinson. And so this is what triggered Elon Musk saying that Farage doesn't have what it takes, because Farage will not accept like Tommy Robinson back like into the Reform Party. He will not embrace him. He disavows him, blah, 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 blah. Okay. And so this is the crunch point between Musk and Farage, is over the figure of Tommy. Okay. Now, again, those of us who pay attention on this side of the aisle have always been a little bit quizzical of Tommy. Okay. Now, there's a channel on YouTube with 2.2 million subscribers called Middle East Eye. I do not watch it, but they put together a little video on why it is that some people have always been a bit reluctant to get behind Tommy. I'll just play this for a moment.
Facing a reporting ban, but he only served 2 of his 13-month sentence. The Middle East Forum, a pro-Israel conservative think tank, claimed to have funded Robinson's legal expenses. They stated they were assisting Robinson by financing his legal defense, applying foreign pressure on the UK government for his safety, and organizing rallies in his support. But what can Zionist and pro-Israel entities gain from supporting Robinson?
And I say to people in the West and in Europe, if you look at how emboldened they come on after October the 7th, after murdering and raping and pillaging 1,400 Jews, look how confident they become across the entire West. Yeah, what do you think they're going to do if they go through Israel? If they killed all the Jews, if they won the war and took Israel, they're not stopping there. They're coming straight through Europe. They're already in Europe.
Robinson positions himself as a staunch supporter of Israel and aligns himself with Israeli politics. This alignment is part of a broader trend where the far right in Europe sees Israel as a defender of Western civilization against perceived Muslim threats.
Average British person stands with Israel in your back. Do you know what it's like now? Have you seen, you must follow what it's like in the UK to be a British Jew. I'm not surprised they haven't all left.
Israeli politics, particularly under leaders like Benjamin Netanyahu, has shifted further to the right, forming alliances with far-right figures globally. This includes relationships with leaders like Hungary's Viktor Orban and former US President Donald Trump, who have also been criticised for their views on Islam and immigration.
Shalom.
Listen, let me tell you something. Yeah? If there was a war tomorrow, which there will be, because I'll probably start at the end of the session, if there was a war and it kicked off, I would be there on the front line fighting for Israel.
These figures malign Muslims and non-white immigrants, much like Israeli leaders who have maligned Palestinians who are also mainly Muslim. In the aftermath of the Southport stabbing, misinformation falsely accused a Muslim individual as the suspect, which has led to protests, riots, and violence across the UK and Northern Ireland. Even on Israeli TV, this misinformation was challenged. But Tommy Robinson doubled down and once again cast shade on the truth, fueling more polarization and then ensuring the Israeli public is also misinformed.
But these riots happened after a Christian British-born stabbed to death three children.
Right, we don't need to get into all of this sort of stuff. And I seem to recall that there was a bit more on that story as well. But you get the basic gist of why a lot of people don't have a lot of time for Tommy. So what's interesting about this is that this network I'm talking about, the one that includes J.K. Rowling, Andrew Neil, Graham Linehan, Konstantin Kissin, the entire Spiked magazine outlet, okay? Well, that's just the British wing of it, right? In Canada, there's another one, Ezra Levant and Rebel Media News, that kind of network up there. And then in the USA, of course, it's pretty extensive, and a lot of MAGA is bound up with this same sort of operation, okay? Not all of MAGA is that way, but a significant part of the American right is bound up with this same kind of politics that Tommy is doing, including the Daily Wire, which is one of the principal ones, and, of course, Jordan Peterson. Okay, Jordan Peterson is a big part of this network I'm talking about. Well, this leads to a very strange thing that has happened, there's basically two Tommy Robinsons, okay? There's the Tommy Robinson as he has been built up in the British media as the ultimate boogeyman, the far-right boogeyman, the system villain, right? The furthest right you're allowed to be in British politics, that kind of Tommy Robinson, who has been demonized for the best part of 15, 20 years by the mainstream press. There's that Tommy Robinson. And let's call him the Guardian Tommy Robinson, right? Tommy Robinson as espoused by The Guardian or by BBC News, all right? And then there is Tommy Robinson, who is just another talking head on all of these alternative media networks, right? There's the Tommy Robinson who appears on Jordan Peterson's YouTube channel with millions and millions of views. There's the Tommy Robinson who, I don't know if he's done Tim Pool, right? But like in a weird way in America, Tommy is just another talking head, right? He's just another bloke. He's just another guy who's critical of Islam or whatever, he's just another right winger, right, on those networks. And this leads to a very big disjunction between the American view or the view that you get of Tommy in America and what he means here, right? So this kind of goes a little bit missing in, it's kind of lost in translation. And I think that is what has happened in this spat between Elon Musk and Nigel Farage, because Farage knows. Farage has been around British politics for best part of two decades, even longer, right? He's lived in this country, he's British. He knows what Tommy represents in the mainstream media. He knows that if Reform embraced Tommy Robinson, that would turn off vast swathes of the country, not just over his support of Israel, but just because he's a heel. He's been set up as a system heel by the regime, by the media machine. He's a villain, right? Tommy is a villain. He sends kind of, he is horrific in the eyes of the Marks and Spencer mother, right? Or the typical kind of shitlib. Okay, this is the role that Robinson has in the system, for right or for wrong. That's just a fact. Whereas to Elon Musk, well, this is just another bloke, right? And I really think that Musk thinks that he might be able to bully Reform or bully Farage into changing his mind over Robinson. That's just not going to happen. And I actually think that, I think Morgoth made a video, I seem to recall a couple of days ago, saying that this whole spat may not actually go Musk's way, right? That the left, and the left have already done this, the left's play on this is to say, who is this foreign billionaire interfering in our politics? This is an issue for Britain and British people. This is not an issue for you. Keep your nose out, billionaire Musk, right? And they will then be able to paint themselves as in some however strange a way, they'll be able to reframe the whole thing as plucky little Britain versus, you know, the foreign billionaire, okay? Farage is not stupid, and he knows that. He doesn't want to be seen as being in hock to or to be pushed around by someone who is perceived as a foreign interest, okay? So I don't actually think that he has misplayed it all that badly. And it seems like this is the line that the mainstream media are taking on this as well. This is the Daily Express, which is read by, you know, big ostensibly right-leaning publication. Elon Musk has lost the plot, but this is why he's actually done Nigel Farage a huge favor, says Mika Smiles, who's a conservative councillor. So she's active in the Conservative Party. Okay. Basically that, you know, for Reform have momentum, this bust up is actually going to help Farage and not hurt Farage. I don't necessarily disagree with that sentiment. I think that people who are on Twitter overrate Twitter's influence. They overrate the extent to which people who are not on Twitter pay attention to Twitter. They overrate the extent to which all of this stuff has normie cut through. Rotherham as an issue has normie cut through, as I mentioned. But when people hear that Elon Musk, all people who aren't on Twitter will hear is, oh, Elon Musk has lost it and he's having a go at Farage, right? Their loyalty will be with Farage at the end of the day, who, let's not forget, has been around for the best part of two decades, building up his momentum in British politics, right? You can't just get rid of the face of the party overnight like that, okay? Here is this guy, this clip I found of a guy saying similar.
Him, as you did, admittedly, a very long time ago. How do you think comments like those made by Elon Musk are likely to have sat with Nigel Farage? Comments like Nigel Farage does not have what it takes, Reform UK needs a new leader. I mean, pretty scathing. How do you think that will have sat with Nigel Farage?
Oh, he'll brush it off like water off a duck's back. I doubt very much whether Elon Musk will be able to get rid of Farage. Farage absolutely controls the Reform Party. It's set up to be the instrument of him as leader. All the parties he's led, he's changed so that he absolutely dominates them.
So, yeah, I mean, Farage isn't going to go anywhere. And if you have a look at Farage and how he's responded to this on his show, he is acting like it's water off a duck's back. Now, Don't get me wrong. I have been critical of Farage on this channel plenty of times. All I'm saying is that if I had to make a bet, is Elon Musk going to be able to use his social media clout and influence to get rid of Farage from Reform? No, he's not. Farage is the party. Okay. Farage is always like that. They're never going to be able to get rid of... He is the face of populist politics in this party, right? And in a month's time, 2 months' time, 3 months' time, the man on the street is not going to give a shit if Farage has fallen out with, you know, some billionaire, basically, even if it is Elon Musk. Anyway, this is how Farage dealt with it.
No desire to go to war with Elon Musk, and I'm not going to, and I haven't done. I'm a huge admirer of him. I think he's a heroic figure. I think the sort of tech changes that he's bringing to the world are incredible. I think buying Twitter actually has brought a lot of free speech back, even if some people don't like what's being said. Well, you know what? Tough. You know, there is no way I'm going to fall out.
So there you go. You can just see, I mean, Farage is a pro. He's been at this for a long time. Let's not forget, Elon Musk is not a pro at politics, okay? He is relatively new. He is wielding his power in a very blunt and unsophisticated way. And I just think that all of the various players involved, including Donald Trump, by the way, who's pretty experienced at this point, whether it's Trump, whether it's Starmer, whether it's Farage, ultimately will just learn, oh, look, it's just Elon acting like a child again. We'll, you know, whatever. Let's just ride it out. They're all good enough to know that he can throw his toys out of the pram as much as he wants. He's not going to, there's some things he doesn't have control over. He's not going to be able to get rid of Farage. That much is certain, I would say. Especially not from his vantage point of not really knowing a lot about British politics. And it's been clear that he has absolutely no understanding of the dynamics at play in the country, right? He's got some understanding, but it's kind of, again, it's crude. And so I would tend to agree with the Express that Farage is going to come out with this pretty much unscathed. Now, the question of whether this is going to actually set the dominoes rolling for Starmer to go is another question. And let me just remind you of the map of the globalist leaders. Where are they? Where's my globalist leaders? Let me just get them back up here. Because it's just worth remembering. Okay, at the start of the year, we had 5 globalists. Now we're down to 3 already. Okay, Biden's already lost the election. Trudeau is out already. Okay, Schultz will be the next to go. And that leaves just Starmer and Macron. Okay. Clear that the Zios want both of those guys gone. They are part of an old regime, an old, discredited, woke, remember, globalist regime that is associated with stuff that happened during COVID. It's associated with crackdowns on free speech. It's associated with high immigration and all of the other bad things that everybody dislikes, okay? So ideally, they want those all replaced with men who are closer to the Donald Trump, or women who are closer to the Donald Trump position. Okay, they're perfectly fine with that, in my opinion, bearing in mind we're talking about Zionists. I also noticed that Bill Ackman of all people, who's basically been a liberal, was also getting in on the grooming gang stuff. I mean, you know, very interesting indeed. However, there's been, again, people get really overexcited with a lot of things. And there have been some wild things talked about this past week, okay? In the kind of sewage pipe of Twitter, people have been talking about USA annexing Greenland, right? Or buying Greenland, something that Trump keeps on coming back to. And there's even been talk of Canada becoming the 51st state. There's been talk of Trump putting sanctions on the United Kingdom, right? I mean, I'd be extremely surprised if any of those things happen, right? Is Donald Trump or the Trump administration going to cause an international and diplomatic, whirlwind by and sever one of their closest alliances in the UK by putting sanctions on the UK over grooming gangs or Keir Starmer's beef with Elon Musk? Is that going to happen? Press one if you think it's going to happen, and press two if you don't think it's going to happen. Let's just see where people's heads are in current year. Let's have a look. Where who thinks that? Yeah, a lot of twos. A lot of twos. Yeah. Of course it's not going to fucking happen. One of the people who sees things quite clearly, in my view, is a chap called Joseph Jordan, right? He's been around a long time. He's had different names, but I often listen in to, he does these like 8-9 hour long shows. I can't listen to 9 hours, Joseph, right? But I listen in on occasion. And he actually pointed out that Trump has a long history when he's gearing up for a betrayal of the base, that he has a history of kind of throwing out really wild stuff, like really wild stuff, like, for example, annexing Greenland, making Canada the 51st state, sanctions on Britain, stuff that's never going to happen, by the way. On the Canada question, right, is Canada formally going to be annexed by America? Anyone? Is the Republican Party going to formally annex one of the most liberal countries in the world, making it impossible for Republicans ever to win an election again? Don't be so fucking stupid. Of course it's not going to happen, right? This is like cloud cuckoo stuff, nonsense, bollocks stuff that comes out of, feeding from the main line, the sewage pipe of slop, that people get so carried away that they end up saying like really stupid things, okay? Canada is not, spoilers, Canada is not going to become part of America, right? I'm not saying it can never happen in the long durée or something, but I can tell you for free, under Donald Trump, Canada will remain independent of America, right? That is not going to happen. Don't be so fucking stupid, right? And in exactly the same way, there's not going to be an international diplomatic situation between the British government and the American government over free speech or grooming gangs or whatever. Don't be so fucking stupid. It's not like it is. Nothing is going to damage that relationship. I've said before, you can have a communist in one country and a fascist in the other country. And you could argue we've got some version of that already, right? With Starmer. Starmer is kind of a commie, right? And they'll find a way to make it work. You're not going to have a situation where the UK and the US are fundamentally at diplomatic loggerheads in that way. All right. And if we did have that situation, that would put significant pressure on the GAE, on the GAE, because it would be perceived by all of the rest of the countries of the GAE that America is actually behaving like an imperial power and throwing its weight around in a manner that is unacceptable for a liberal democracy and the community of global nations, blah, blah, blah. Okay. Bollocks. You're not going to get sanctions. Okay. And these aren't predictions by me. This is just me saying, like, you're talking about cloud cuckoo stuff when you entertain these sorts of prospects. Greenland, I will say, this is something that Trump keeps on coming back to. And there have been a couple of weird little things around Greenland that I've noticed, like the Danish king changed his coat of arms, I saw, and like there's a sentiment within Greenland to be independent from Denmark, right? Maybe. I would be gobsmacked if any of those three things happen. But anyway, Joseph Jordan has this theory that when Trump is gearing up for a monumental cuck, when he's gearing up for the mother of all betrayals, right? And who knows what that's on? It could be on Ukraine. It could be on Israel. It could be on the H-1B thing. Who knows what it is, right, that he's going to cuck on? That he throws all of this stuff into the blender to get people talking and to get people's imaginations going. So, you know, it gets them not thinking about the thing he's about to do. Okay. That's his observation. We will see whether that is true or not. I'm not making any, don't want to make any predictions. I don't consider things like Canada is not going to become part of America in the next 4 years a prediction. That's not a prediction, is it? That's just saying, like, you know, the next 4 years are going to look like the last, you know, how many hundreds of years have those countries been there? Let's not get stupid here, okay? Now, I don't have that much to say about Trudeau going, other than it's been on the cards for a while. And, I mean, I thought Trudeau was starting to look like an anachronism. A lot of the other WEF types, like the Jacinda Ardern, remember Horseface, the Aussie one, you know, the Finnish one who ended up working for Blair, they all disappeared, didn't they? They all went all at once, like a couple of years. They just like suddenly resigned. Who was the Irish fella, the Indian guy? He went as well. I mean, so Trudeau was increasingly looking like a throwback. He was looking like a woke throwback, wasn't he, to 4 or 5 years ago. But friends in Canada have told me that the thing is with Trudeau is that he was just so stubborn and so stupid that he was just clinging on, basically. He was clinging on way beyond the point where he should have resigned already. And now it's just been untenable, and now he's gone, okay? I'm also told by Canadian friends that the Conservative Party in waiting is no better, really, than, like, lots of Canadians are pretty black-pilled in general. So even though they've welcomed the news, and there's some kind of happiness coming from Canada, the general view is that not a lot is going to change, even though Trudeau has gone. It's just that he personally has become too unpopular and too accountable for too many issues to make it. His position has become untenable, basically, especially after his chancellor resigned a couple of weeks back. So anyway, there it is on Canada. Maybe Black Horse is going to make a video or will have something for us to talk about Canada more fully soon. All right, let's get on to Super Thanks and Super Chats, and then we will get out of here. I will get up my... I will get up my Super Thanks. Quite a lot of people watching this afternoon, which is good to see. I suppose it is fairly big as news goes that we've been talking about. Let us talk now about the questions that people have had. I have no idea what people have been saying, by the way, because I can't, when I'm doing these solo shows, I can't see the chat. So if people have been calling me all the names under the sun, so be it. All right. So in terms of Super Thanks, there's been a few since the last office hours, which was last week, I think. MAGA Crunchy says, this is five questions that will define American politics in 2025. MAGA Crunchy says, for a man committed to no more predictions, you sure write a lot of headlines with closed questions. I must be reading too much into it. Well, you are, because that rule only pertains to tier one mainstream media. It does not pertain to questions written on slides by me. So even if I ask a question with a closed question like that, it means nothing because I'm not the Times or the New York Times or the BBC or even a journalist. So that rule only pertains to mainstream media. Untred, son of Untred, says, "Good day." Are you secretly Alexander Mercurius to be saying good day in that manner? He says, unrelated to international affairs. So this is on the international affairs version of that video. He says, unrelated to international affairs, I will soon be visiting Wales for the first time. I am mainly going to see castles, but I was hoping you might have some non-tourist sites you could recommend to me. Also, what Welsh delicacies should I seek out? Cheers. Well, obviously, Shergar Welsh Butter is one of them. try to get yourself down to St. Fagans. That's quite a cool place to visit, St. Fagans. The Brecon Beacons is nice to see if it's a nice day. Do go and see the Brecon Beacons. The Ogmore, the beach at Ogmore is pretty nice. There's a castle down there as well, Ogmore Castle. But then if you carry on going down to Ogmore, there's some massive caves and things down there. That's pretty nice to see. If you really want to see some caves, there's Dunaragh Caves, of course. What else? I mean, if you're only there for a couple of days, that there's some suggestions for you. In terms of food, I mean, one of the things people tell me that you can't get in parts of the country is a rissole. So if you go to a fish and chip shop, instead of having fish and chips, order a rissole. Because apparently I've met English people who've never even heard of a rissole, but we have them in all our chip shops in Wales. You know, you could try the rare bits and the, Barra Breeth or lava bread. Those sorts of things, you know. I've never really, I mean, the Welsh rare bit is worth trying. The Barra Breeth or the lava bread, I can, you know, I'm as much of a tourist as anyone else when it comes to those things. I mean, I've tried them, obviously, but I didn't really grow up eating those things. My mother would make things like, she'd make a corned beef pie with pastry. She'd make a shepherd's pie, cottage pie. Lot of roasts, lamb roast, obviously. But those are things you can have anywhere. There's the marsh lamb, the salted marsh lamb. Try that. Those are all things that you can see. Obviously, I know South Wales more than I know any other bits of Wales. So, yeah. Those are my recommendations. If anybody else has any other Welsh any other Welsh things, then, you know, go for that. After 7828 says thanks, but he's given $25 for that. That was the international politics five questions video. Well, thanks a lot for that. Every little helps. Also on the international, I don't know why the international one got all the thanks. The British one got no thanks, but the international one has got lots of thanks. Also on that one, DK Supreme says, in your estimation, what would it take for the British people to accept the dissolution of Parliament into the larger discourse? Is such talk suppressed or subject to legal action? I don't know, to be honest, DK. I honestly don't know the answer to the second part. Is it subject to legal action? I honestly think that it wouldn't take that much. I still believe that if Charles declared that he was going to dissolve Parliament, that the people would side with Charles over the Parliament. I really do believe that, but I could be wrong. Scott says, and this is on last week's Office Hours, Murdoch is a must watch, and I think anyone new to this side of political thought should watch all the way through Murdoch before they share any opinions. That's not a bad shout, actually, Scott. If people watch all the way through Murdoch, they'd be surely be a lot more based than they are now. I'll tell you that much. I mean, I think part of the issue is that almost nobody has done that, Scott, and that some of us have been around long enough now that we started to see cycles repeat, right? We're starting to see the same tricks come back up and the same people fall for those tricks again. Anyway, I don't consider myself part of the right at this point anyway. I really don't. So honestly, I don't care what people do. But yes, good advice, Scott. Good advice. Alphonse Rides Again says, Americans show their true colours when they gloat about the decline of Europe. They feel quite smug about it whilst simultaneously denying to the death that they have an empire. Well, I mean, I don't want to open up that can of worms, but I have always said that when people behave in that way, when Americans behave in that way on Twitter, every time they do it, they lose more people, not just Brits, but anyone from around Europe. I don't think they understand how badly it plays, right? I think they think that they're doing banter or something like that, but they're not. Like, people do not take that. When Americans be like, oh, yeah, well, you know, in your country, you're just getting raped by Muslims or whatever, right? These are the sorts of comments people don't take that as banter. They take it as the hatred. They take it as hatred, basically. So I do think that Americans, some Americans, not all, obviously, but the ones who do that, do their fellow countrymen a massive disservice when they get into those kinds of flame wars over those sorts of things. That's my view anyway. Super chats now. David Brinkeroff says, did you see the article in The Hill? Musk asked his followers if the US should liberate the people of Britain from their tyrannical government, the 52nd state after Canada. Welcome to the Union, AA. Yeah, I mean, the trouble is that Musk doing a poll on Twitter means nothing, because Twitter is dominated by bots. It's dominated by call center Indians. It's an international audience. Half of the left have left the platform. Most people aren't on there, right? So it just means nothing, really. And I think that as time, if Musk continues in this clownish manner that he's been behaving, Twitter will cease to be the quote-unquote public square as more and more people decide that they don't really want to be part of the platform. Like me, for example, I'm not posting on Twitter anymore because it's just unbearable. It's just unbearably shit. It's just kind of repulsive. So I don't want to be part of that. And I'm not even a leftist. Most of the leftists have left already. So, right. And then you could say, well, okay, yeah, but there's a critical mass of other people there, right? But it's like, well, okay, but at the end of the day, those people aren't those, like, they're not the ones who are journalists, right? Or they're not the ones who are, running channels or whatever. And really, it's those people who, you know, if they decide to disengage with it, Twitter loses power and influence, right? And I feel that Twitter is diminishing. And the more times Musk does one of these kind of episodes, the more it seems like a ghetto, right? Rather than the international public square or whatever, okay? And it's because of his personal behavior. Right, it's not necessarily because it's right wing or left wing or Zionist or whatever else. It's because of his personal behavior. Red Pill Pharmacist says, adding Greenland wouldn't change the. And I mean, I have to show you this. I forgot to show people this. Right, it was Ian Chung Lee. I should have showed this at the start. Really, somebody sent me this because people are still sending me things on Twitter, even though I'm not posting on there. Somebody sent me a flowchart of Ian Chung Lee and doing his toadying act. I talked about this last week, didn't I? Ian Chung Lee, Nigel Farage is England's last hope. Support this man. Nigel Farage should be in charge of the UK right now, to be honest. Elon Musk, the Reform Party needs a new leader. Farage doesn't have what it takes. Ian Chung Lee, spineless and self-serving. Nigel Farage isn't the leader Britain needs. So there it is. That's how easily, that's how slimy Ian Chung Lee is in current year. All right, so let's carry on. Red-pilled pharmacist says, adding Greenland wouldn't change the electoral calculus. If we were going to cloud cuckoo land, Greenland would be 3 electoral votes. It will never happen, but if it did, it wouldn't change much. That's a fair point, Red Pill Pharmacist. And I'm not making predictions, but if I had to make a bet, if you held a gun to my head and forced me to bet on which of those 3 things is most likely to happen, that is, the US putting the UK on sanctions because of things the Starmer government has done, Canada joining the US, or Greenland joining, I would say Greenland is the most likely because it's the least significant of those 3 things. And Trump has talked about that quite a lot in the past as well, even all the way back, like in 2016, he was talking about that. Monothelma says, all eyes on Austria. Why is that? What's happened in Austria then? What's going on in Austria? Did their government collapse? Is that right? There's always a government collapsing somewhere in Europe, isn't there? The quote-unquote far-right Freedom Party is tasked with forming a coalition. So, Austria has gone, quote-unquote, far-right, apparently. That happened before, though, didn't it? What happened with the other dude? Kunst, what was his name? Kunst. This is a new far-right guy. Well, maybe Man of Thalmas can at some point give us the 411 on what that was about. He did a great guest video on the downfall of the Scholz government before in Germany. Maybe he could explain what the hell's happening in Austria. Last I remember, they had a far-right government, Sebastian Kunst, and then he was done for fraud or something. They were under a criminal investigation, and then they stopped being the government. Now apparently they're back. Is this a different... This is presumably a different anti-migration, pro-Kremlin Freedom Party. Now, is that the same party as the Kunst from before? Kurtz, not Kunst, Kurtz. He was cooed out of office. Then he started... Who was Kunst then? It was like a German striker. Yeah, he scored against England in Euro 96. that was Kunst. No, Kurtz, that's right, Kurtz. Monk Blanc says, never let your enemies define who are your friends. Yeah, indeed. Ave Lucifer says, my main issue is with people who are too afraid to talk about anti-whiteism, so they latch onto Israel to be politically correct. Perhaps. Coney says, well, remember when Trudeau was elected back in 2015? The current year, part of my bio name is a reference to his response to someone asking why he decided to make his cabinet a 50-50 gender split, because it's 2015. What a twat. Yes, Coney, current year. When I use current year, that is also an oblique reference to Trudeau in 2015. Some of us oldies remember Trudeau saying that. That was a big meme back in like 2016, if you remember. Back in the anti-SJW days, Trudeau, he did this like smug little shrug, didn't he? It's just because it's the current year. I've always hated Trudeau. What a prick. Coney says, could you expand on your critique of vitalism, that it's just a reheated version of Tony Robbins? When did I say that? No, I can't. Not at this time. I'd have to think about it more. I can't even remember saying that. Pretty good line, though, isn't it? Pretty good line. The thing is, Coney, is that I've got a lot of time for vitalism. and I've got a lot of time for Tony Robbins. So, you know, if anybody's been watching my shorts, you could say that my shorts are reheated Tony Robbins too, because he has got, like, okay, he's cheesy as hell. And it's a little bit too, like, the way he frames it is a little bit too kind of American and, like, capitalist and so on. But as a kind of rule book for achieving your potential and so on, there's something in Tony Robbins. There is something in there that it's, like, worth taking from it, you know. The power of belief or whatever, you know. Awaken the giant within. Broman Hank says, if Elon's behavior can be changed by pushback on X, does this not present a challenge to elite theory? I've been thinking about the student council from the Michelle's chapter in The Populist Delusion. Well, the thing is that this is a quirk of Elon Musk's personality. Elon Musk wants to be loved by the audience he's cultivated, which is overwhelmingly a right-wing audience. Okay? And so, you know, whether that works on a political kind of statewide level, I mean, the elites have got a lot of elastic, right? But the elastic is not infinite. It can snap. There can become a moment where they push too far, which is what I was talking about with this. I mean, in Populist Delusion, I imagine a student union that completely banned meat on campus, like unilaterally. And what would actually happen in the student politics of that campus? And I imagined that this would be a step too far for people who don't usually pay attention to campus politics, right? And that you'd quickly get people running who wouldn't have run purely on the issue of reintroducing meat, right, to campus. That was the thing I imagined back there. It's not unlimited what an elite can get away with, right? On the other hand, that elastic can go quite far. I mean, you could argue it can go all the way to Stalin. You could argue it can go all the way to North Korea. Right? Have there been any significant pushbacks against the North Korean regime from within? So there's elastic and there's elastic, right? So, I mean, it's hard to know when that point comes, is the answer to your question, Broman Hank. And that's it, I think, unless I've missed something. Pretty sure that's it. All right, let's keep it short. Let's keep it nice and quick and breezy. I'll be back tomorrow with hopefully our Adam Curtis review will return tomorrow. I also have a video about rhetorical tactics in kind of homage to Stefan Molyneux, which should be interesting. And pick up a course, promo code SHORJAN, and catch you then.
What goes on in this town is none of your business.
As long as I'm living here, it is.
Then maybe you shouldn't be living here!
Well, that's easily fixed.